We Speak with the Sky by Grain Jew and Origami Dragons. Monkey D. Luffy slams the entire battlefield with a wave of untempered Conqueror's Haki at the most inopportune moment possible, because of course he does. Because no member of Garp's family has ever made Sengoku's life easy. The executioners crumple like rag dolls, and Sengoku curses, turns, and everything twists. And then all of a sudden the sky is upside down, an impossible ocean overhead stretching from horizon to horizon, and the air is filled with the sound of drums. Whitebeard is on one knee, amid the smoke and blood, trying to force himself back to his feet because this cannot yet be where he dies. When something huge plummets from the impossible sky to the ground in front of him, in a blaze of white, laughing. Everyone left still conscious after the blast of Conqueror's Haki seems to still, with the exception of Ace's indefatigable younger brother somewhere to his back, whose desperate footfalls are all the more clearly audible for the silence that's overtaken Marineford. The thing that lands on its feet in front of him, bouncing lightly on its toes, casts a curious look around. Wide red eyes settle squarely on Whitebeard as he struggles to his feet, and then a grin breaks over its face like sunrise. "Oh, Ace's old man! Hi!" Another quick look around, and then it continues almost absently, "I'm not supposed to be here." The form isn't familiar, but the voice is, somehow. The thing in front of him speaks with an unnatural bounce and resonance to its words, and it's spinning something in both hands, so fast that Whitebeard can discern nothing but two blurs of motion. "Oh," says Whitebeard. There's not much left in the world able to reduce him to speechlessness. But this is about as close as anything's gotten in a while. The pounding drumbeat saturating the air isn't helping. It's so loud he can barely feel his injuries. "Where are you supposed to be?" He reserves such questions as, "Who are you?" and "What?" for later. The thing glances up at the doubled-over sky, then seems to remember something. It's got a billow of white smoke, or maybe cloud, draped around the back of its neck. Awakened zone? And as it flicks its wrist to send whatever's spinning on its fingers flying, it flops to its back, cackling madly, and points up. In the sky! Spinning blur the smaller crashes directly into Admiral Kisaru, launching him 20 meters sideways and knocking him over for good measure. Whitebeard tracks Spinning Blur the larger with his haki as it flies towards the ocean, attempts to reverse direction, gets caught in some sort of strange gravitational pull, presumably related to the upside-down, bombed-out island taking up the sky above Marineford, and falls like a rock into the waves. The thing is busy laughing, completely captivated by its own glee. It's shrinking, too, until it's no taller than Ace's younger brother, who, Whitebeard checks, has covered quite the distance in the lull. "Hey, Ace's old man!" Whitebeard decides to humor it. Often wise to ask what something that can toss around haki signatures of that strength like nothing wants before engaging it. Especially if it's just fallen out of the sky in a fit of Grand Line capricity. "Did you do this?"
"Me?"
the giggling little thing asks, before breaking into a fresh wave of laughter. Up on the executioner's scaffold, Sengoku is shouting again, almost indecipherable through the sound of drums still shaking the air.
"I didn't do anything. I could do something now, though. I can do whatever I want."
Despite himself, Whitebeard chuckles.
"You're not with the Marines, are you?" he asks, as some of the prone soldiers on the ground around them start to stir.
"Course not,"
the thing says, still bouncing in place, the ground around it rippling like the uneven surface of the sea.
I'm a pirate.
He thinks, unbidden, of Roger. Of an old story told in a cherry grove. And nothing makes sense, but at the same time, everything does. Everything that needs to, at least. I see, he says, and grins.
Oh, Roger, you'd get such a laugh.
Some of the Marines still on their feet are gathering their wits, launching into motion, and he can hear some of his men, distant and panicked, shouting his name. You carry on then, boy. My crew and I have just got something very important that needs doing here. It giggles.
Okay, old man, it says. Bright, bright, bright. And good luck.
And then it's gone. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Kuma is. Doom, do, da, da. There are drums. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Doom, do, da, da. Kuma is alive. And there are drums. They shake through him, lighting up nerve endings like tiny suns, waking him, waking him, waking him, calling him to life. Doom, do, da, da. Kuma is alive. There are drums. The air is suffused with divinity. He is on a battlefield, and he is on his knees. His head is pounding with the drumbeat, with free thought, with wonder. This is a miracle. He clasps his hands together to pray. Nika, he says, caught in impossibility. His prayers are a patchwork thing, distant memories from his childhood, litanies intended for the god his family had pretended to worship for generations, cut apart and stitched back together in the sun god's name. The words of his heart. It's never felt like enough, like a liturgy worthy of the sunrise, but it's all he's ever had to give. Doom, do, da, da, pound the drums. Kuma murmurs gratitude, soundless the way he learned worship must be when his father died. Asks for strength. And courage and ability. He's alive, and there are drums. He's alive. Dum doo da da. Something's laughing. He opens his eyes, and the sun looks back.
Hi, says the sun. Says Nika, brilliantly white, impossibly real, in motion, setting the very air around him vibrating. Doom-da-da. Pear guy, Bonnie's dad, hey, why are you crying? I didn't know you could do that.
He can barely breathe. He's alive. Impossible, a miracle. Distantly, another voice, familiar, unforgettable. Is calling his name. Whispered prayers tumble quietly from his lips, unstoppable even if he wanted to. He can't think of anything else to say. His mind is still half fog, dragging itself agonizingly out of oblivion, and what's awake and aware of him knows nothing but drums and white light.
It's good I met you, Nika continues,
wavering slightly with heat and light and sound, real, far more real than the distant haze of gray and movement and noise all around them.
I wanted to say thanks for looking after Sunny for us. You kept her safe. Thank you.
A sentiment he can't even begin to make sense of here and now, even as he burns it into his mind to never forget. He will not forget a single second of this because it is a miracle. And he knows those do not happen twice. Do not happen at all. Nika stares at him, through him, laughter like a living thing, and then brightens impossibly and says,
"Oh, here, I know it'll make you smile."
He's alive. It's a miracle. He never dared to hope he'd get one. Doom, do, da, da. And Nika reaches up and up and up, impossibly high, unbound and unconstrained by any rule of reality or logic, to the island hanging inverse in the sky, and Kuma watches and prays. Admittedly, Ace has not felt in control of the situation at any point since waking up in Impel Down somewhere between 10 and 15 days ago, but he's pretty sure he has now officially lost the plot. Being executed on account of that bastard who isn't his dad, that's been inevitable for his whole life, basically. His family trying to rescue him, he wishes they wouldn't, but he can at least see how they got there. His little brother awakening Conqueror's Haki in the most spectacular way possible. Well, Luffy is going to be King of the Pirates, if Whitebeard doesn't get there first. A cackling mass of white cloud falling out of the sky to interrupt proceedings, chatting with Whitebeard like an equal, shrinking and brightening until it hurts to look at, and then reaching all the way back up to grab a speck of pink out of the sky. Ace can't say he knows what to do with that one. The battlefield is wavering, rocking up and down like swelling waves, like a heat haze. Ace would put just everything about this generally down to his own imagination in his moment of imminent death, if he wasn't also seeing Marines and pirates alike trip over their own feet as the ground surges beneath them, falling and crashing into each other like dominoes. Somehow, though, Luffy doesn't seem to have noticed anything weird. Ace watches him bounce and pinwheel his arms for balance, drawing closer and closer to the execution stand, kicking Marine officers unconscious and bouncing up off the ground like he was made for this. It makes Ace want to hope. Luffy's always had a way of that, of taking hope and shoving it between Ace's ribs, whether Ace asks or not. Ace watches him, casting his eyes around for threats, heart in his throat. The warlords are mostly distracted. So are the admirals. Admiral Kisaru is down for the count. Admirals? Kisaru? Whatever. Not Ace's problem. It's a straight path to the scaffold. It could be. There's no way Luffy will make it in time. "Hey, Gramps?" he hears himself say a little distantly. Overhead, Sengoku is screaming something into his microphone. At least he doesn't seem to be talking about Ace anymore. Small mercies. Even if he's still not entirely sure how he got upstaged at his own execution. "I've got no idea either, kid," Garp says back. And Ace almost laughs at the sheer absurdity of it all. Here he is waiting to die, watching the sun fall to earth, and they're talking like everything's almost normal. Nobody has stopped Luffy yet. Somehow. Impossibly. Akainu stands from his throne, pours in a tide of magma and gritted teeth down to the battlefield. Ace's heart skips a beat, but the Admiral doesn't seem to take any notice of Luffy, instead making directly for the bright, wavering shape, casting sharp black shadows in every direction. It's more or less still for the moment, the ground rippling outwards around it in bouncing waves, partly hidden behind something huge and dark. Akainu storms towards it, leaving a trail of smoldering stone behind him, Marines and pirates alike leaping out of the warpath. Ace squints. It doesn't help him make any more sense of what happens next. The light expands suddenly and dramatically, and clarifies somewhat, regaining enough definition that Ace can make out a pair of hands, suddenly massive, grabbing Akainu, cupping and squishing him like a bug. A few stray drops of magma drip between the thing's fingers to sizzle and cool to stone against the ground. Sengoku, somewhere above his head, has gone silent. Laughter echoes across the battlefield to the beat of the drums, unceasing, as the thing throws itself backwards, bouncing to its back, then back to its feet again, then winds up and throws. A glowing ball that either is or was Akainu goes flying with such velocity that it vanishes into a literal twinkle in the sky. Ace blinks. Turns to look at Garp and finds him looking back, face wide open with bafflement, eyes wide. Ace snorts. Garp grins. And it's like his chest cracks open, and he's laughing before he can help it. There's a pounding in Kobe's head. It's rhythmic, half familiar. He's dragging his eyes open against the ache searing through his entire body, against a bright, blinding light. Something must have happened after Luffy punched him. He's pretty sure he didn't go out staring at the sun. His head aches. Well, he's alive. That's nice. He didn't manage to do anything against Luffy, which he should probably feel worse about. That's nice. There's a pounding in his head. That's less nice. He'll lie here just a second more until he can move again. Whatever's outside his eyes is blinding. There's a pounding in the air. Heat haze. Doom, do, da, da. Jinbei is trying not to think about the implications. The implications can wait. What can't wait? Ace, still kneeling on the execution stand, cuffed in sea stone. Ace's little brother, forging unstoppably forwards, bounding over unnaturally unstable ground and unconscious marines alike. Whitebeard, on his feet but wheezing, losing blood from the hole in his chest in a wet red tide. The sun god, cackling mad and free in the middle of the battlefield, will have to be deferred. Jinbei tears his eyes away with difficulty from the light and tries to focus on the immediate dangers. Finds himself pressing a hand to the brand on his chest still. Akainu and Kisaru at least seem to be out of commission. Aokiji is apparently preoccupied, at least momentarily, with a few of the division commanders. Ivankov, previously at Straw Hat's heels, has peeled off, apparently towards Bartholomew Kuma, currently nearly invisible behind a corona of white light. Whitebeard's back is guarded by his men. The way is clear. There was a story Kuma told Iva and Ginny back in Sorbet Kingdom, huddled in the ruins of the old church. He'd spent the night before cleaning up the place while Iva and Ginny slept, and they'd woken up to see him knelt, facing the sunrise, hands clasped and head bowed. The light had made him look even younger than he was. Sprawled on the floor next to him, waiting for him to be done so they could figure out breakfast, was the first time Iva had been close enough to hear the name of the god Kuma worshipped. Iva had asked about it after, of course, while they feasted on stale bread Ginny'd stole and preserves Kuma's family had left in the pantry. Kuma's face had gone still and frightened for a second. And then, as though startled by his own freedom, he'd smiled and talked on for hours about the sun coming out of the sky. It's hard not to remember that morning as they tear towards Kuma and the bright white thing in front of him, condensed down to human size now, but still so shimmering bright that looking at it from a distance hurts. In a way, Iva might be a little jealous of. The ground is heaving dangerously under their feet, and it's all very overwhelming on a sensory level, which, quite frankly, is supposed to be Iva's job. So, yeah. Later, when they have time to think about this in more detail, they'll be a little put out. As they close the distance, the white thing clarifies into something like a person, bouncing in place so fast it's leaving motion lines behind it. And Kuma knelt like he'd been praying, has his arms around a girl. They're both crying. She looks like Ginny.
That's better, right? The thing is saying. The god is, as Iva approaches their incongruous little circle, very carefully.
They saw what happened to Admiral Akainu.
There's a giggle underlying its voice at a distance to it, like it's echoing down from the heavens. Kuma is weeping with an openness Iva hasn't seen since he was a child. The girl, who must be Ginny's daughter, must be the Bonnie they remember hearing so much about, must be, is tiny against his chest, held like a precious thing.
Dad,
Bonnie is saying, thick and barely comprehensible as words.
Dad, Daddy.
The god makes a noise somewhere between confusion and interest, tilting its head dizzyingly. Then it twists suddenly, and Iva meets its sunrise red eyes suddenly and directly. And it beams, brighter than the sun. Iva almost wants to shade their eyes.
Oh! Hi, Iva-chan!
What?
Okay, she guesses it would make sense that Kuma's god would call her by Kuma's nickname for her. She guesses. If she's ever made any appearances in his prayers, it would have been under that name. But still, what?
Howdy, Iva says, feeling vaguely shell-shocked.
Nika?
The god, from what Iva can tell, makes a face.
You too? I told Bonnie, I don't know what that is.
It looks back at Kuma, then adds, almost thoughtfully,
these guys sure cry a lot.
Iva manages, eventually, around the sheer what the hell that's mostly dominating her thought processes at the moment.
I suppose they haven't seen each other in quite some time.
Yeah. I guess he was dead or something, the god says, seeming unbothered by it. He seems okay now, though. Which is good. He's a good guy, huh?
Iva feels a little like they might cry themselves.
Which is absurd. They still don't have a single clue what's even happening.
He is.
The god laughs, a delighted and bounces to its back, and then back up, flipping in the air.
Good. It's good he's happy, even if he's crying about it. I like him.
Iva is going to cry. The god's radiance makes Kuma look young again, rhapsodic with liberty, makes Bonnie look younger than she must be, a swirl of pink held gently to Kuma's chest. Iva asks, feeling their legs weak under them, you did this. The god
scrunches up its forehead, Iva thinks.
I already told the old man, it complains, gesturing further back down the battlefield. I didn't do anything. I'm just having fun.
Iva's not entirely sure they believe that, not with the drums pounding in the air and the ground wavering beneath their feet and the light stinging their eyes. But it's been way too long and hectic a day for them to feel up to arguing with a god. They sit down instead, watching Kuma. The stone reshapes slightly under their weight.
Thank you anyway, they say.
They've never been religious. Maybe they should start.
The god flops to its stomach, chin cushioned on its arm, staring at Iva, and then startles back up. Quah! Its eyes pop impossibly right out of its head. A flare of white-hot Conqueror's Haki lightnings right past Iva, and they hear several bodies drop behind them. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, right,
says the god, flopping back down. The corona of luminous clouds draped around its head flattens and bounces back, same as the rest of it.
Thanks for taking care of Sanji, Iva-chan. He said you taught him lots.
Iva blinks.
Who?
Huh? The god tilts its head. No, that's its whole body. In confusion. Then hits the ground, making Iva bounce.
Oh yeah, that hasn't happened to you yet.
Too bad. It sticks its tongue out.
Thanks anyway.
Okay, sure, why not? The god can have powers of prophecy. That makes as much sense as anything else that's been happening. Bonnie lifts her face from Kuma's chest, red and splotchy from crying and smiling, fit to beat the sun.
I found him, Dad,
she says.
See? I went to sea and found him. I told you I would.
Kuma makes a desperate, gasping sort of noise and clutches her like the world's most precious thing. The sun god laughs, hits the ground, bounces back up again. Overhead, the island hanging in the sky is alight with fire.
I found him,
Bonnie repeats, voice high and hiccuping.
And he brought you back.
You did, Kuma agrees. The first coherent thing Iva's heard him say. His glasses are all askew on his face, lenses gummy with tears, and he's beaming. It couldn't be more different from the flat, horrifically empty mask of his face they'd been confronted with not even an hour ago. It's maybe the best thing they've ever seen. Bonnie, he says. You gave me a miracle. Ace's laughter is rusty and wheezing and bright as morning. And Garp thinks with sudden and remarkable clarity,
Ah, fuck. I can't let this kid die.
And it's got nothing to do with Roger and the old broken promise he made. Everything to do with Ace. And a shared moment of shocked laughter and maybe something about the drums in the air, too. Doom, doo, da, da. That sound kind of makes Garp want to do something stupid. Ace is shackled in sea stone, flesh and bone. And it's a long fall to the cobblestones below. On the other hand, Luffy is right there, and Garp's always prided himself on his throwing arm.
Kid, he says, pushing himself to his feet. You're a real pain in my ass, you know that?
Ace blinks up at him, still grinning despite everything, damn it all. Gramps? He wraps a fist around Ace's chains, and in one hard yank pulls them clean out of their moorings. Unlocking them can be a problem for other people, later, once the kid's gotten out of here alive. Sengoku is preoccupied, if only for the moment, two admirals down and something impossible running rampant on the field. He'll be angry in a second. Might try to kill him, even. Dishonorable discharge, almost certainly. For some reason, Garp can't really find it in himself to care. No regrets. Good luck, brat, he says, and heaves Ace bodily off the platform, chains and all. Ace shrieks, familiar and wordless. Everyone on the battlefield seems to look up at once, even Whitebeard, even Sengoku, even the sunbright thing blistering everything that draws near. And then, in the space of two heartbeats, Luffy catches his brother midair, all cushion and bounce and safe place to land, just like Garp knew he would.
Sengoku tackles him down, and in the next second, howling outrage and half-transformed, grinding his face down into the wood, but it's all already done. The die's been cast. Garp laughs and laughs and laughs. It's kind of boring watching people cry. Luffy glances around, but most of the fighting isn't that interesting either. Except, oh, the seagull guy's pounding Gramps' face in. Hey, seagull guy, he says, launching himself over to them. Bonnie and Kuma and Ivachan's eyes all bug out as they get smaller, which is kind of silly. That's pretty funny. The seagull guy stops hitting Gramps long enough to squint at him. Gramps also squints at him, but Luffy doesn't pay any attention to him because he's Gramps. Luffy crashes into the side of the execution stand, and it bends over all the way to the ground and then whacks back up. The only way he doesn't go flying is because he grabs on real tight to Seagull Guy's big gold arm. And that's when he realizes, oh, you're Trappy's Gramps. What? Says the Seagull Guy. Who is Trappy's Gramps? Which is kind of boring of him, too. It's time for Luffy to go back to his crew. They're way more interesting than all this. He laughs. Robin will think this was so neat. He lets go of the seagull guy, who is Traffy's Gramps, as the stand whacks back up again and... Bye, Gramps! Off he goes.